Welcome to the Are Your Hands Full podcast, a step-by-step parenting podcast for your Jewish family. My name is Dr. S. Yaroslavitz, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Please check out the most recent Are Your Hands Full download at www.handsfullchinuch.com. That's handsfullchinuch.com. Welcome to Lecture 10. I hope you are enjoying this series and the topics that we are exploring. Please feel free to ask any questions that you have about parenting and behavior management of children with special needs by calling in and leaving a recording of your question. I'll be happy to address these questions in the order that they arrive to me. So just to recap, here is the list of the 9 lectures that we've done so far. First, we talked about what comes first, behaviors or emotions. Then we discussed doctors' predictions, ignore negative behaviors, separate without comment, adolescence, and preemies. We talked about staying organized and consistent, and we explored sibling rivalry in children who are typically developing and in children with special needs. So today's lecture is about a very prevalent topic. It's about ADHD, or Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. Our caller, who brought up this question, phrased the question as follows. How do we help our ADHD or borderline ADHD children thrive in our world? This is a very prevalent and very loaded question, because regardless of whether we are dealing with the population who is developing normally or the population of children with special needs, just about every class has at least one child with ADHD. So let's talk about what precisely ADHD is and how it manifests itself. This is the Mayo Clinic's definition and short synopsis about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Here we go. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, is a chronic condition that affects millions of children and often continues into adulthood. ADHD includes a combination of persistent problems, such as difficulty sustaining attention, hyperactivity, and impulse behavior. Children with ADHD may also struggle with low self-esteem, troubled relationships, and poor performance in school. Symptoms sometimes lessen with age. However, some people never completely outgrow their ADHD symptoms, but they can learn strategies to be successful. While treatment won't cure ADHD, it can help a great deal with symptoms. Treatment typically involves medications and behavioral interventions. Early diagnosis and treatment can make a big difference in outcome. Okay, so that's it. Nice and clear. This is precisely what ADHD is. And there are a few types of ADHD. There is the predominantly inattentive type. That's the type that focuses on the first letter, A, in ADHD. A child with the predominantly inattentive type has difficulty paying attention, difficulty staying on task, appears not to listen when spoken to, and is forgetful. Okay, so that's clear. Then there is the predominantly hyperactive and impulsive type. This type focuses on the letter H in ADHD. Such children are always on the go, they talk incessantly, they have difficulty sitting in one place. They impulsively blurt out answers in class and jump in to finish other people's sentences. Often this type of ADHD gets missed because the child knows their work in class, even though they are hyperactive and impulsive. Okay, and then comes the combined type. The combined type of ADHD displays symptoms of both types of ADHD. These children are highly distractible, they can be impulsive and chutzpahdic and disorganized. So in the case of children who are developing normally, A child with ADHD symptoms, but no other symptoms, in my opinion, in my books, is still considered a child who is developing normally. Children who have other diagnoses together with the ADHD might be experiencing ADHD from a variety of other reasons. Sometimes the side effects of other medications that they need to be on, let's say seizure medications, could be reduced focus and attention. Sometimes a child will have had previous damage to their cognitive skills, which reduces attention span automatically. And sometimes reduced attention span is simply a classic symptom of the diagnosis or the syndrome that the child has been diagnosed with. But because this question was asked on this forum, I'm going to address ADHD in both the typically developing world and the world of special needs. So no matter what the case, our children are born into a society where focus and concentration are key. Whether it's davening, whether it's learning, whether it's mastering a craft, whether it's reading, whether it's staying quiet during Kiddush and Challah, or any of the many activities of daily living, there will always be a time that your child will be asked to control his or her impulses and pay attention, sometimes for a short period of time and sometimes for longer. And no matter what level of disability we're dealing with marginal exceptions, I think that we, with all our training methods, do manage to get kids to concentrate at least for short periods of time. We kind of have to. Our children aren't growing up in Asia where they can run around loose on the rice paddies. They're being asked, in some form or another, to sit in chairs for some stretch of time and concentrate for some stretch of time and stelzi on some level to the tasks at hand. In generations that passed, children who couldn't learn were lumped into one category of schwache learners without discrimination of the cause of the learning difficulty. Now we know more and understand more, and we have figured out that children diagnosed with ADHD mostly have normal or above normal intelligence and can be treated so that they can learn just like everybody else. So now comes the question, how? There are two ways, and most kids need both. As stated previously by the Mayo Clinic, medication and behavioral sessions, neither one alone does the job. So now comes the million-dollar discussion. It is quite common in our world for parents to be frightened to medicate children who are diagnosed with ADHD. And I'll be the last one to get on board of any side of this conflict of whether to medicate or not. But as someone who has been teaching and coaching behavior management for almost 40 years in one way or another, I think I can weigh in on some of the surrounding concepts just to help parents gain clarity on this topic. So the first concept that I'm going to weigh in on is the concept of side effects. The term side effects, the word side effects, right away elicits fear. Why? Because if you look up the definition of side effect, by the way, you should always know that whenever I don't have full clarity on an idea or a concept, the first thing I do is look up the definition of that term in the dictionary. It's amazing how much clarity you can get just from reading a definition. Anyway, here's the definition of side effect. A side effect is, quote, a secondary, typically undesirable effect of a drug or medical treatment. So I looked at this definition and I asked myself, 1 minute, if the side effect discusses the secondary effect, where's the primary effect? For example, if the list of side effects of various brands of insulin, which is used to treat diabetes, is 4 pages long, that could get very scary. But then again, did anyone look at the primary effect of insulin? The primary effect of insulin is that someone with diabetes can't live without it. So that's pretty clear. Because if you're going to pit secondary side effects against a life-saving medication or drug, most people won't fight that off. And mostly, Das Teira wouldn't let us fight it off, because we have the achrayas to prolong life for as long as possible. Okay, so that's easy. Now, let's stretch this a bit and ask ourselves, particularly with boys, what constitutes life or living in our society? In our society, where we know that every child, whether developing typically or with special needs, needs to learn Torah on whatever level he is on, how much achrayus do we have to do whatever is necessary to make sure that our children exit whatever educational system they are in, being able to daven, listen to a Dvar Torah, learn, follow a shir, or simply answer amen to brachas? The achrayus is ours. So how do we define the primary effect of an ADHD medication? And how do we define the secondary side effects of ADHD medications? Well, on the overall, the side effects of ADHD medications are there. Yes, they are. But in all fairness, they really should be compared to the side effects of asking a boy with ADHD to sit in a boy's cheder 52 weeks a year for 15 years. Or in all fairness, they should be compared to the side effects of asking a girl to sit in a girl's classroom 46 weeks a year for about 15 years. In all fairness, these side effects should be compared to the side effect of being sent out of class on a daily basis. That's a side effect. Getting very low grades and not mastering skills that lead to rewards and incentives that most of the class gets, that's a side effect. High levels of negativity from malamdim and teachers who are being driven to their wits' end, that's a side effect. Or being sent out every day into the office to help collate papers while everybody else is learning, that's a side effect. These side effects have a long-range effect on the ultimate final product. So I'm not telling anyone what to do. All I ask is that you look at three things. Number one, the primary effect of the medications that treat ADHD. Number two, the secondary side effects of medications that treat ADHD. And number three, the secondary side effects of not treating a child who has been diagnosed with ADHD and is being asked to make it through our school system. The second concept that I want to weigh in on is the concept of stigma and fear of difficulty with shidduchim. In this lecture, this concept applies mostly to children who are developing typically, but have been diagnosed with ADHD, because most of you, parents of children with special needs, have already climbed out of the fear of stigma, thanks to the beautiful way our world has changed. Most of you have joined various organizations that have helped you realize that Hashem has his plan for everyone, and other people's opinions can have no impact on that plan. You all know that the most important thing is to do what's right for each and every child, without taking into account anyone else's predictions or opinions. But sometimes, our parents of children who are typically developing have not yet mastered that skill. So let's help them. Here we go. I'm going to borrow a line that I used to help other parents agree to put hearing aids on their children. This is the line. And I quote, "The hearing loss is far more obvious than the hearing aid." And you probably know how true that is. Here's another one. "The visual impairment is far more obvious than the glasses." So now let's apply this to ADHD. You probably can construct this sentence yourself. The ADHD is far more obvious than its treatment. And the third concept is Das Teira. After all is said and done, There is no competition to the peace of mind that we get when we consult with Das Torah. I often wonder how others whose societies don't have the structure of asking an elder, a leader, an advisor, a mentor, in our case, it's a Rav, a Rosh Hashiva, or a Rebbe, how do they manage? The responsibility is just too great. We are so lucky, and we take this part of our lives so for granted. So after you've gathered together all your concepts and all your ideas and how it affects the particular child in question, you take that question that you have to Das Torah. You will never go wrong that way. So now let's move on to a discussion about concentration and behavioral sessions. That's the other part of the treatment. Behavioral sessions can occur in a speech therapist's office, in an occupational therapist's office, in a physical therapist's office, in an ABA setting. It can occur in your home, just about anywhere. It doesn't really matter. What makes a behavioral session behavioral is that the clinician is the one who drives the car. And the client, in this case the child, is the passenger who is mastering the skill that the clinician is offering. Why is this so particularly important in the case of a child diagnosed with ADHD? The reason is that if we were to leave the session to the devices of a child who is diagnosed with ADHD, then the session would appear ADHD-ish, and nothing would get accomplished in the direction of treating the ADHD. If all of us agree that in our society, the ADHD needs some form of treatment, then we all agree that we need to do whatever we can to increase attention span, reduce impulsivity, and in general, eradicate the ADHD behaviors. Once we accomplish that, the child will be able to participate in our society's framework of school, of yeshiva, of cheder, and the like, and grow to be a functional adult. Another complication when dealing with children who have not been diagnosed with ADHD is the difficulty with actual diagnostics. There is no blood test or brain culture which gives us the unequivocal information of whether or not a child has clinical or chemical ADHD. This can cause a lot of confusion, a lot of procrastination, and parents often resist treatment because they are not truly sure whether their child has ADHD, especially if ADHD appears to overlap with other diagnoses such as anxiety or seizure disorders. So what to do? Parents are often very confused because most psychiatrists have the parents fill out a questionnaire, ask a lot of questions, and then write a prescription. This makes parents extremely uncomfortable, understandably so. He's sitting here with me for 20 minutes asking a bunch of questions, and then bingo, he writes a prescription? I don't feel right giving such a medicine. How do I know that my child really has ADHD? So here's a way that I sometimes explain it. I hope this is helpful. It's through a mashal. I know I'm going to date myself by telling you this, but I grew up before throat cultures. So every time any of us got a sore throat, there was no real way to know if the throat was a strep throat or not. And to make matters worse, the concern of not treating a strep throat was very real because a neglected strep throat led to rheumatic fever. So they were really scared of this. So what did they do? If we got a red throat, we landed up at the doctor who prescribed 5 days of antibiotic. If we got better right away, then they knew we had strep throat, and they increased the antibiotics to 10 days. But if we hung around and didn't get much better, then they knew that our red throat was viral, and they discontinued the antibiotics after 5 days. I'm not telling you that this was a perfect option, but it was the best they had at the time, and somehow we all survived. So here we are today, without a brain culture, that would tell us if a child who is exhibiting behaviors typical of children with ADHD actually has ADHD. So what do? They do the same thing. They try a medication, usually a stimulant, which does not accumulate in the body and can be easily discontinued. Then they watch and wait. If the child exhibits improvement pretty much immediately, then we know the child actually has chemical ADHD. Because a pill will only manage a condition that is chemically based, right? And I've seen kids literally turn around in 3 days. But if the child's behaviors and attention span don't improve, then there's a strong chashash that something else might be going on, and further exploration and diagnostics is necessary. So either way, such a method does provide some clarity. And what about children below the age of 7, who generally don't get medicated, and children with very mild ADHD-ish symptoms? For them, we use behavior management. We teach a child how to think, how to slow down his or her brain and not skip steps. One of the best ways to introduce concepts of slowing down and thinking to such kids is through one of the strategies in the Hands Full program called Missions. Emirtza Hashem, I hope to spend the next lecture reviewing INB and SWC, ignore negative behavior and separate without comment, and adding a little bit of a discussion about missions to the mix, so that you will be able to use this strategy to help along in this endeavor. Thanks for listening to my podcast. My name is Dr. S. Yaroslavitz, and I am the director of Hands Full, which is committed to the provision of community education in the area of behavior management and cognitive development of children. I look forward to hearing from you with any questions that you have. And remember, no matter how impossible things may seem, the Earth will continue rotating on its axis.